would know part of what is in. The Secretary of Defense couldn't be here on their own. Would you close the door, please, maybe? The Secretary of Defense couldn't make it on. She had other responsibilities internationally. So she has asked one of the members of the Secretary to lead a delegation that comes to Parliament, that comes and deals with the crucial issues that are in front of us. It is about human resources and grievance procedures. Truly. It's human resources and grievance procedures. Yeah. That comes out of the annual report, as we've been going through the annual report. So the two gentlemen that are coming in, they are going to present and show us exactly what changes have been made and what the department is trying to do to make sure that it meets its target. So, Mrs. Redrawa, if you could just introduce your people.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, good morning. I'm Dr. Redrawa. I'm the Chief Director for Human Resource Policy and Strategy. Apologies for the Secretary for Defense, who could not be here, as the Chair has already indicated. And also apologies for the Chief of Human Resources, Lieutenant General Mugwezi, who is on his work set. So I was sent here to come and present the issues, but first let me introduce my delegation. I have Mr. Zwane. Mr. Zwane is the Director for Labor and Service Relations. The grievance procedure and the whole individual grievances, he is responsible for that. Secondly, I have Brigadier General Divest. Unfortunately, he is no longer Director of Strategy and Planning, but however, the issues at hand, the MSDF, the overarching strategy, as well as the overarching mechanism, I mean the overarching strategy, he is the author of all those issues. He knows the details of those issues. He was just moved to go and make sure he utilizes his competency to take care of the career management as from the 1st of November. Next time when I come to present something related to HR strategy, there will be a new Brigadier General who will come with me. But for now, General Zivet is the person who has the knowledge and the know-how, since he's the author of the three issues that are before. Thank you very much. I'm not sure if the person is. I should also introduce the members from the Ministry.
No,
they will introduce them.
No, don't worry about that.
Okay. Thank you.
I just want to make sure you understand the documentation that is in front of you. We have the one that says presentation to the Portfolio Committee on Defense, DOD overarching HR strategy, expansion of MSDS, and effectiveness. This is your first document that we are going to go through. And then the other ones are going to follow on the credit procedure. So that is that they say you are ready to take us through the processes.
Chairperson, honorable members.
I just wanted to check with you. Do members want to ask questions when all the presentations are finished, or because it's very important information, do you want to be given an opportunity to raise where you are not clear, but not 100 questions. But let's do it in this way. After Mr. Zivet is finished, we'll ask questions. And then when Mr. Zwane followed on the grievance procedure, you'll have to ask questions so that you don't sit to the problem of wanting to know everything at once. But this is very important, honorable members, because I want you when you go to your constituency, the constituency offices, and wherever you go, should be able to have all this information in front of you so that you don't any more hesitate when you have to deal with issues that are in front of the soldiers. Can I give over to Mr. Tibet? Kuya Mora,
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members, to present today on the DoD overarching HR strategy, the expansion of the MSDS or Military Skills Development System in your department, and the effectiveness of the Mobility Exit Mechanism, EISP, which stands for Employee Initiated Severance Packages, which is a civilian version in the public service of the Mobility Exit Mechanism, also known as the MEM. Chairperson, the aim of today is to brief you then on those three matters as requested when the annual report of the department was discussed. First of all, Chairperson, we will deal with the strategy, because the strategy also directs to a large extent the other two matters. Chairperson, the department was in position of HR strategy called HR Strategy 2010, which I think was well known to most of the members around the table. But during 2008-09, the department embarked on a very comprehensive review of HR Strategy 2010, and that leads to this version of the strategy, which is called the Overarching Human Resource Strategy. At the top of this strategy, Chairperson, the aim of this strategy is, as indicated on the board, is to ensure appropriately composed, empowered, very important, empowered, and manage the defense HR complement and execute the department's mission and mandate. It's not possible if you don't have a competent HR contingent that can do that. The vision is therefore to ensure mission-ready human resources, the mission ensuring well-managed human resources throughout the HR process and practice sound HR processes. The mission success factors of this strategy is you need proper leadership, transformational leadership, dedicated ownership of all the objectives and tasks in this strategy, excellent communication, and also regular performance management in terms of corrective action as you implement this strategy. Chairperson, this strategy stands on three pillars, and we will deal with the three pillars. The first pillar is at the bottom here. You need HR of the appropriate quality, quantity, the correct numbers, and composition and cost are very important drivers. Then your second thing is you need to execute your human resource strategy in an accountable and excellent way. And lastly, you need also to link your strategy into the broader government intent in terms of human resource strategy of government. Chairperson, the Department of Defense embarked on a process to say we need to link our strategies to what we call the balanced scorecard of the department. And what we see here, Chairperson, is the top-level balanced scorecard of the department. Again, three themes of appropriate defense capabilities, accountable defense administration, and commitment in pursuance of government's policy and strategies. In terms of the perspectives, you align your balanced scorecard in terms of your outputs. I'm not going into that detail. What is the internal processes that you follow to execute your strategy, how you manage your resources, and how you build for the future. In developing the new overarching strategy, we said from day one that we want to align that strategy also to the corporate balance scorecard of the department so that you can measure this implementation. And here we see the strategy's balance scorecard at the top level. And to speak to that, Chairperson and Honourable Member, first of all, you need HR in T1 of the appropriate quality and quantity as already indicated. Accountable human resource administration throughout your processes and alignment with government imperatives in terms of human resource. Again, the imperatives as I just indicated, so here we see what is the deliverable at the highest level on the human resource strategy, as an example, to be mission ready in terms of your resource, to support operations in terms of human resources, to mention a few. Here you see the macro internal processes to ensure and provide management in terms of the human resources, to enable your human resources, and all the tasks, Chairperson, that we will see shortly in this very comprehensive strategy is aligned to these outputs and internal processes. Obviously, you need internal human resources to manage this whole process. And in doing so, you need to build for the future. You need to ensure appropriate human resource reserves, as an example. You need to ensure appropriate human resource development in empowering your people. And you need to ensure appropriate renewed human resources, rejuvenation as an ongoing process. And lastly, you also need to ensure that your systems, for instance, your computer systems, are updated, improved, and properly aligned to support your process. Chairperson, improve team oneness, the first pillar of this strategy. Appropriate quality and quantity human resources of the right composition and the right cost. That strategic goal of that team stands on four main objectives. First of all, you need the right quality or quantity of people and quality of people. So objective number one speaks to quality and objective number two speaks to quantity. There are 22 tasks that were identified to achieve that first objective. In terms of quantity, the right number, 5 main tasks. How you package your HR composition in terms of make up to fulfill your mandate, 27 tasks. And in terms of your human resource cost, which is important cost driver, 5 tasks. So we see in order to achieve team 1, we have 59 tasks. Now, Chairperson, it's impossible to run through each and every of these tasks, but I will highlight a few of them in the detail in the presentation. In terms of quality, Chairperson, the 2 tasks, you see in black all the tasks and in blue. I only highlight as an example some of the important ones. In blue, the execute service-specific recruitment for each arm of the service, Army, Air Force, Navy, and SAF. They have different requirements. How do you execute? There's a lot of elements that speak to this. Yes, Chairperson, is also a written document, a very detailed document, that explains each and every one of them. We see a lot of recruitment and marketing initiatives. We need to ensure remuneration that's appropriately aligned with the market as far as possible. Recently, we saw some improvement in terms of our remuneration strategy for our soldiers. That's exactly the foundation lies in this strategy. Implement focus measures to attract and retain our scarce skills. Prioritize the utilization of scarce skills in support from the reserve system integration strategy. Ensure appropriate visibility in terms of career planning and help people progress through their ranks. We always say the military grow its own timber. A member come in as a private and is a general of tomorrow. How do you do that through visible career management? Select and appoint personnel with top quality leadership in your senior management and middle management structure, and to ensure effective transfer of competencies as you move on. In terms of quantity, the right numbers, you need the personnel feeder system to meet the requirements of the needs of the Defence Force. Here we will specifically deal with the MSDS, and that's where the MSDS fits into a large extent. In terms of your composition, Chairperson, 27 tasks, I highlight, continuously improve the SANDF remunerative benefits. In your composition, you have different maestrings in the Defence Force, over 170 of them, from medical doctors to pilots. How do you remunerate those diversity over the different maestrings? Then ensure the social responsibility exit of members. So when they get to exit, which we will address also to the men, how do you deal with those exits in an honorable way and a social responsible way? Ensure sound combat versus support distribution, that you don't sit with a skew balance between your support versus your combat ratios, and to ensure personal profiles that match the profile of the post. And lastly, Chairperson, your HR cost. You don't want your HR cost to run away. Currently, the HR cost is in a region of just on 16 billion of the total defense budget. Our objective is still to get it not more in a region of 40 to 45% of the total defense expense allocation, which speaks also to best practices in defense forces worldwide. Chairperson, the second theme runs about accountable human resource administration. This strategy speaks to the total value chain of human resources, from recruitment, planning, right through to separation, and speaks to the generic functions that you find in the total human resource value chain. In the first place, you need to practice good GRC, governance risk management, throughout the HR process. Nice hours to be identified. Your policies, functional policies, need to be in place. Your human resource planning, that plan and budget for the future might be there. Then you start acquiring the people. How do you do that in an accountable way? Then you need to develop the people. As you develop them, you need to career manage them through the process. Mr. Zwani is here under Dr. Glover, sounds labor related, a very important matter. Chairperson, when we developed this strategy, military veterans were still part of the department, and therefore we even include the element of military veterans. That might be divorced in time to come on the way forward. But, and then you also need to maintain your members, Chairperson. There's some transversal HR functions that's also important that support these generic functions. That is things like the image of the department as employer. You need proper human resource information IT systems to support all these processes that I just mentioned there. Service delivery, not only outside but to your people inside, is an important generic function. Discipline and morale, HR competencies, and even occupation, health and safety, that's part of the portfolio of Chief of Human Resources. As in the case of Team 2, I'm only going to highlight a few methods. On governance risk and compliance, we need to do it in a proactive way to identify our risk in a total HR management process. And that's the function of Director GRC, Governance Risk Compliance. And we need to ensure a single individual performance management tool that also interlink with organizational performance and management at the end of the day. That on its own is a big task and an objective in that sense. When it comes to your functional policies that you guide your day-to-day administration of HR, you need to establish a system and process to ensure that the policies are executed in a proper way. Sometimes policies are very important, they are very important directing documents. We always say we have enough policies, enough strategies about implementing them and executing them in the correct way. HR planning needs to plan and implement appropriate HR planning IT systems to do some forecast on attrition and budget correction. When it comes to HR acquisition, we need to reduce our turnaround times of appointment, to mention one, in terms specifically of civilian appointment. There's a lot of recruitment initiatives, and we need to develop a cadence of professional recruiters. The best infantry person must recruit the infantry because they understand the business. And not so much HR people. Pilots must recruit pilots, and we must build that team. In terms of maintenance, we must prevent all the qualifications resulting from all administrative transactions. And the department came a long way over the last 3 years through Project King Audit to reduce those, and this strategy might help further to achieve that. In terms of occupational health and safety, the department sits with quite a challenge in terms of its backlog in terms of infrastructure, and this is about executing that to comply to the act of our country as far as occupational health and safety is concerned. In terms of HR development, a number of tasks, 20 of them. But the first one, which is a sub-strategy of this overarching strategy, is the human resource development strategy. That strategy is now in its last stages of finalization. You need to encourage personnel to improve their competencies throughout and how it speaks to career management. And we need to empower our commanders and line managers in this whole human resource management and specifically HR development process. There's matters on ABAC, there's matters on how to accredit our training through NQF and the CETA process. Military veterans, six stars, has been identified. This is now a separate strategy will become. But the important matter is how to support our veterans, because the military system you are the producers of military weapons, and how do you speak to some of these tasks in terms of life after the military when members become veterans? Career management 12 tasks. Here we need to ensure career development plan, update individuals' aspirations. Chairperson, this is a challenging task, and that's now my new job that I took on since 2 days ago, is to see how can we make career plans visible 2 years in advance. Now, other militaries in the world achieve this, but that's easier said than done. But that's what the strategy we want to achieve at the end of the day. And we need to ensure standard career management processes throughout the four services that we deal with. Labor and service relations, Mr. Duane will speak more to this, but we need to ensure the development of labor relations experts that can deal with this matter is a discipline on its own, and we need to streamline processes and how we apply IT so that we have the finger on the pulse every day to say, what is the number of grievances? How long do we take to solve it? We will speak more to this matter. The transversal matter, Chairperson, is the image of the newly employer. Here a number of tasks, but I highlight the utilization of all possible events to market the DOD into the deepest rural areas, that the members understand what are the careers the mustering that the Defence Force offers and how we see to the DOD as employer of choice. Human resource management competency, here we need, already mentioned that, it's costly, empower our commanders and line managers, because they must work with their human resources every day. And how do we empower them to deal with this diversity of issues that I just mentioned? And we must need also be sure that operational exposure in terms of human resource management is carried over to the human resource practitioners. So when we are peace support missions, as an example into Africa, how does these human resource processes that I speak to, the HR people also support those processes even in deployment scenarios. HR service delivery, we need to develop standards and measures of HR service delivery. When people come on a unit to a duty room to deal with leave or whatever query, that service delivery might be excellent and the turnaround time might be good. Think of grievances, the IT system that needs to support them. HR IT, you cannot perform these things if you don't have state-of-the-art technology and ensure the empowerment of HR practitioners in terms of the IT and ensure in the whole process proper data integrity of all the people that work for you to deal with them in a professional way. Discipline and morale, Chairperson, strong training, but we need to institutionalize the defense and build the culture and ethics throughout our education training and development processes. We need to improve command-line communication to our members so that they're properly informed in terms of the way forward. Chairperson, the last thing is how you link all these things that you just speak of also into government's broader intent in terms of human resource development, things like the youth come to mind, women, physical challenges, and things like that, Chairperson. Here is a number of tasks identified that link into the corporate matter. I highlight only 2 years, Chairperson. We need to ensure the socially responsible re-entry of MSDS members into civil society after their training period. We need to empower military veterans throughout the dedicated skills program, which is a task on its own with the new DC now being established. Chairperson, this in short of a very detailed strategy which is captured in a written format in about, I see it's about 40, 50 odd pages document. But you can have the best strategy in the world if you don't implement it in a proper way. As I said, this strategy was approved earlier this year. And the challenge is now, the Chairperson, to implement this strategy. Now, how we see it is the HR strategy intent might be resolved and impact on the medium-term execution guidelines, responsibilities, and performance indicators. As I said, it linked to the balanced scorecard. So we will use balanced scorecard now to monitor progress in this regard. And what we're basically doing, Chairperson, that is our part two, the strategy. Part one is the high-level strategic direction of the part. Part two is the strategic implementation plan of this strategy. But the actual execution on an annual basis, you see in what we call the DOD overarching HR support plan. The Department of Defense has now for the third year in a row a corporate HR support plan on the table. We learned a lot through this process here. This plan speaks to the year-on-year target to implement, to control, and to defeat that. Now that's where we see, you saw how many tasks are there, Chairperson. We will pick them and prioritize them. And for the first year, now the plan that will be on the table, those priorities will be incorporated in the corporate HR support plan, and then we will implement and measure them there. Because you can't achieve all those tasks that I said in one. That's your medium-term threat. But on an annual basis, you need to chunk them and say, this is my priority. Even if it's five, let's do them proper and implement them proper. Next year, we take another 5 or 10. And that's how we see the world forward. Chairperson, that in a very short nutshell, the strategy. The second point, Chairperson, is about the expansion of the military skill development system. Chairperson, the intent or aim of this military skill development system was, and it was implemented in 2003, so it's 7 years with us now, as part of the DOD HR renewal strategy, at that stage, action strategy 2010, to provide very important sufficient jump and trained members for force deployment, especially during peace missions. How did we achieve to expand this program and where do we stand today? The goals, the high-level goals written in 2003 for this system was, it must be an induction for members into the SANDF. Youngsters coming from school, how do we induct them through that system into the SANDF? We need to equip the members with basic military skills and functional skills. First basic training, then to be trained in a specific functional director. Either be a controller in the Air Force, infantryman, armor, or whatever the case might be. Then we need to evaluate members' development potential, and it must continue to serve and feed both the regulars, those people on a permanent appointment, and our reserves. In that process, we need to test members so that the organization can choose individuals for a possible future career in the military. And you will see in Chairperson what we achieve in that regard. And we must also ensure a sufficient training pool of young fit members to fulfill the SANDF deployment needs, as an example, to peace missions. But we must also feed the reserves with trained troops and junior leaders. This was the high-level goal stated in 2003. I want to measure now in terms of this goal. We must understand, Chairperson, that this system is one of several service contact systems in the SANDF. There are some others, not only the MSDA. It's essential, its essentiality serves as a probation period during which the SANDF can assess those new recruits that join for their performance, discipline, conduct, and then decide on their future utilization. The MSDA is not a separate system or project stands apart from the mainstream recruitment. It's embedded in the mainstream recruitment, and that is the main entry system. The skills part of the MSDS, and that's very important, Chairperson, here was some misperceptions in the past, refers to basic and fundamental military skills which are imparted to the new recruits to lay a foundation for the future and their career progress through the military. As far as post-MSD employment is concerned, Chairperson, we envisage at the end state, that was in 2003, that the post-MSD employment entails a seamless migration of these MSDS members who join now the reserve stream to other employers like government and the private sector, and so that they can serve there in their private capacity and serve back in the reserve. That was the intent in honoring their obligations in the reserve. Our Chairperson, the National Treasury, over many years, since 2003, allocated certain money to this program. So if we look at the total for the current year, it's 1.2 billion rand that was allocated to this system. Now, if you think today we have close to just over 8,000 people annually in this system, growing into 10,000, the average cost to train a member, equip them, is about 130,000. So very easy, 130,000 times 10 is 1.3 billion. So this is the money next year and into the future on this program. By far the majority of the money went to the SA Army, as indicated there, if we can use 12-13 as an example. Let me show the money part of the MSDS system. Chairperson, what was the main achievement since the implementation of this system? 30,207 young members joined the system since 2003. That's a sizable number. The SANDF on average share and honorable members received good publicity with this rejuvenation using the dupe and development. I will show you one or two examples. As far as the regular force mission readiness is concerned, we improved the rank H requirement of our troops by 45% through this system. I'll show you a graph shortly on the next slide. In 2000, for instance, only 10.8% of our regular private troops were between the ideal age of 18 to 24 in terms of international norms. Today, it's close to 56% of our privates are between that age group. 15,648 out of the 30,000 deaths, and still 8,000 today in service, ex-MSDS members joined the regular, feed into the regular system. 1,438 out of that 15,648 are members in the officers' rank today. So they, the youngsters, the lieutenant, the captain, the highest rank of these members is captain since 2003, and they are already progressing to become majors. 8,403, so you see, this system produced the junior leaders, are non-commissioned rank, with the highest being a small number of staff sergeants already. The majority are obviously corporals and sergeants. Chairperson, and now my system is here.
Yes.
The next slide, Chairperson, is the age distribution.
Here we see. It's not your system.
That's not my system.
Look, no, don't worry about that.
Luckily, we solved the problem. Chairperson, in 2000, September. On the red line, 10.8, 2,200 out of 20,000 privates were between the ideal age of 18 to 24. And as we progress through the system, and here we can see the percentage, how it improves over time. Today, 11,000, this is regular privates, permanent privates, between the age of 16 and 20, 18 to 24, 11,600, close to 11,700. Out of the 20,899 privates in our system are between that age in April 2010 at the end of the financial year. Chairperson, further main achievement, the system prevents a new avenue of HR development for the other age, as we can see, 30,000. The SANDF has succeeded to place more than 2,000 former MSDS members who exit the system into the civilian labor market, where we help them. One of the challenges is it's not so easy to track their performance after they left the defense force. So we still need to improve that. Currently, Chairperson, 8,509 MSDS members, that is now over the last 2 years intake, are under training for further rejuvenation potential into the regulars and into the reserves. So if we add up the 85 with the 15,000 that joined Chair, then you will get the balance, which I'll speak to shortly. And we must also understand, Chairperson, that this system is a more affordable feeder system for the regular standpoint directly into the regular. It's about 35% cheaper. The main challenges, Chairperson. Chairperson, first of all, the SANDF training provides for basic and functional military skills. The provision of specific portable skills for the general labor market in the RSA economy in a relatively short space of time of 2 years remains a challenge. We really want to do that. An infantryman are trained as infantry. That's the main purpose. When that person leaves, what is the add-on skills? Yes, we gain generic skills like leadership, working groups, etc. The member who's been trained as a chef, as an example, the portable skills are easier. So we must understand that challenge. Chairperson, the challenge, the reserve system, is not feeded in an efficient way. The main reason is it speaks also to the size of the intake. If we can increase the intake number, the feeder can become bigger. But 4,000, over 4,000, out of a potential of 4,744, who finished their 2 years, joined the reserve system. So that's a sizable number. The challenge is, however, there are not so many officers, but they are over a 500 non-commissioned officers. It remains difficult to attract youth from minority population groups and university graduates. We need to improve that in future chapters. Seamless integration of the MSDS members into the civilian employment. I already touched on that. That has to do with that first bullet also. Due to the fact that members looking for permanent job opportunities, we can understand that aspiration. But we hope that we can achieve in future to say, if a member came with a certificate that he served in the military, we must give such a member preferential treatment to find employment in the private sector. Because there are limited job opportunities in the labor market available. The last slide of challenges, Chairperson. Employment agreement with major employers in the RSA labor market is not yet fully successful. Accreditation of all our training remains a challenge. It's part of the new strategy, SAPWA, CFAC accreditation. When called up, the four levels of the reserves cannot be guaranteed due to the voluntary nature of Chairperson. And in front of this committee earlier this year, served some legislation to help this committee. The MTS planning chairperson provides to have 11,140 worldwide today, 8,500 MSDS members in the system. That means just over 5,000 in terms of the annual income. This way forward strategy on the MSDS chairperson. The department decided to implement two separate intakes from January 12th, that's in a year's time from now. An intake for the regulars, so that you recruit directly for the regulars and the member knows from day one that they see the regulars. And the intake for the reserves, and you need to deal with the reserves in a separate way, in behaving with the private sector, government departments in terms of job opportunities. The regular intake chairperson, you will appoint the member directly into the full service system after coming into the MSDS. First year will be for formal training, and also a probational period. So we see we want to merge to a large extended two systems. The size of your regular intake will be driven by your regular force attrition rate. The current 3-year average attrition rate of the department is 2,750. So your regular intake will vary between 2,500 and 3,000 annually, and the rest is for your reserve intake. Your reserve intake, you will appoint the members for a 1-year full year training and 1 year full year utilization to get them the practical experience, followed by the 5-year part-time reserve utilization. The full system of 7 years for the reserve must be fully funded, because chairperson currently we only fund the first 2 years and not the 5 years in reserve system. The full system and the system for the utilization 5 years in the reserve must be properly funded. And we must establish partnership with business, the public sector, for formal employment after the MSDS, and also to release those members when they are called up for commitment. Therefore, we need to establish service-level agreements with the Department of Labor for CFS training and involve future employers to buy into this concept. So, for instance, a member that exits and go and work for ESCOM, give them some form of assistance, those employers, in terms of funding those trainings through the Department of Labor. The National Skills Fund comes to mind here. And establish the concept of compulsory service when called up for reserve, the Defense Amendment is in the process, Chairperson. That, in short, Chairperson, how the department builds its capacity, its achievements and challenges on MSDS. The last part of my presentation, Chair, members must also obviously exit the department. And here we have the instrument called the mobility exit mechanism for the military and employees initiated several packages. Chairperson, the legal basis for the MEM is embedded in Rule 14.8 and 20 of the Government Employees Pension Fund, because it's about benefits that a member might receive when he or she exits the department. National Treasury approved this in 2005 after the Minister of Defense through Section 55 promulgated. And this was been done on 12 July 2005. So the current MEM is now 5 years worth of. The intent, Chairperson, of this MEM when it was implemented, is to help with the right-sizing process. Now, right-sizing, chairperson, is a word on its own that goes over many terrains. It's about age, it's about representativity, it's about career progression, it's about stagnation and things like that. We need to execute, therefore, such right-sizing through realistic succession plans. You need to tell the men, military is a broad, call it the up or out principle, up or out after a number of years. We need to guard also against the exodus of scarce skills through this process. We need to advise members in terms of their career progression as informed by the transformation and restructuring imperatives, the organizational structure. We need to make a choice to accept or reject the offer, because the intent of the MEB is a voluntary mechanism and it's a voluntary in nature. The guidelines in terms of accession planning for the MEB was questions that you need to ask yourself when you apply them. Are there a shortage in the functional line? And what does it mean? What is the status of the education, training, development, and learner throughput? So when this member exits, what is the pipeline in terms of PTD that sees this process? The maintenance of expertise is crucial. Will it contribute to right-sizing over the longer term? How will it improve to correct your race and rank imbalances? The old service system, the one that was in place, people said in terms of contracts, how do you deal with the members, the expiry of those contracts, and the succession plan, which is the role of service divisions, are embedded in this process. Chairperson has a few words on the employee-initiated package. Similar when the department who lead, basically, who led this process in 2005, the Minister of the Public Service Administration also made a determination in January 06 after the military one to implement a similar system for the civilian contingent in the rest of the public service, and that was being done in 2006. The benefit is similar to that of the military, although it's driven the different rules that govern it, and it's also employee initiated, therefore it's voluntary in nature as indicated in that. Now, chairperson, here are the statistics. Since implementation in 2005 up to now, in terms of race and rank, the number of members that's approved by the minister to exit the department through MEM. So we see it's a 5-year period, 3,780. The total of close to 2,500 are white, which speaks to correct also representativity. There we see the total 17 Indian, 365, and close to 850 African. When we look at this chairperson, we will see that the majority of the numbers sit there in a senior rank, typically members that got stagnation. Here on Brigadier General, even Major General, although the number is small, if you compare it as a percentage of the total, it's a sizable number. And then also on your warrant officer's level, which is the top rank of your non-commissioned going into warrant officer rank, that's where the majority of them lie. But you can also have chairperson, a private, that's long in the rank, many years a private, 18 private, and that's why you also see 287 privates out of the 20,000 that make use of this. And there we see the civilian, 530. If we look at this 530 of civilian, here we see the breakdown. Again, it speaks to the salary level 6, where you find stagnation normally, and up in the higher salary level, there's the equivalent of a colonel, 24, etc. Chairperson, in terms of rank and age, here we see across 18 to 65 years of age, the rank and the piece of number there. Then we will see, chairperson, that mainly members, although you find members between 50 and 34, and then you will see it's down here at the sergeant, star sergeant level. And when you look at that, you will find it's members that's already long in the rank. But the majority of people you find here between the age of 55, over the age of 55, over the age of 50, and definitely over the age of 40. There is, however, 800 people in the 35 to 39 bracket, lieutenant colonel major number stands out, and the reason for that is members long in the rank. And that speaks to this slide, Chairman. Here we see, if you look at all the military people, piece up at the bottom who exited, this is the number of years that they were in the rank. And here are the age. So if we look at Brigadier Generals as an example, on average, all Brigadier Generals, they stagnated, there's no upward mobility, the upward out principle. They exited after 7 years in the rank, and the average age was 57. Colonels, 8 years in the rank, 53. If we look at our warrant officers, 7 years, 6 years, staff sergeant, 7 years, and they saw the 50-year age mark. And then, Chairperson, a very detailed slide. This slide only indicates per year since 2005, and the divisions and services that you find, and where's the majority. Then, obviously, the bigger number is in the Army, followed by the Air Force, and a similar number between South African Navy and SAM. And then the other division, big division, is the Human Resource Division, 230, and the Logistics Division, 176. Chairperson, I want to end my presentation to say, we achieved definitely some of our objectives in terms of representativity by utilizing the MEM in a responsible way, by asking those questions as earlier indicated, achieved our age improvement by applying the MEM. For instance, if we look today, 36% members exiting the rank group colonel, lieutenant colonel, warrant officer. 30% of all exits are white males in the ranks, as indicated, and 67% are white men. It's not a matter of chasing whites away here, Chairperson. We look at expertise and continue. But we must understand that we must also correct certain imbalances of the past. It's difficult to precisely forecast your right-sizing results as we move forward, Chairperson, because it's voluntary of nature. But if it's voluntary of nature, the organization has the last say. So if the members are in a scarce category, the organization can say no. And it happens many times. The tempo and implementation of both the members in the EIEC is determined their success in the DOD. And we need also to look at cost on an annual basis. We monitor this on a monthly basis, Chairperson, and we continue to emphasize the succession planning effort and how it's embedded in the MEM application as an integral part of this process. So, Chairperson, that ends my presentation in terms of the overarching strategy, the MSDS, which is the feeder system, and the MEM, which is the exit mechanism. Although, Chairperson, the MEM is not the only exit mechanism. Many people can retire, exit to death. So this is only one method of exiting the department, which is controlled by the employer. But it's a very important issue. Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members.
Always keep us and keep us informed about what you do. You do it in a very lively, correct way. Honorable members, can I give you an opportunity for questions? If you do have them, if you don't push. Okay, I've got Tatum Langeni, I've got Mazia, I have Honorable Coronavirus, I've got Mainir, I've got Mamu Mapeza, I've got Tatum Masango. Yeah. I don't know what Honorable Stella is saying, but she says I've got everyone. What the implications of that, I don't know. But we do have her on the line somewhere. And Honorable Black. Tatum Langeni, good morning.
Good morning, Joshua.
You
never have late here. I came on time. Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. Because of ignorance, I may not be asking an appropriate question, but I've always been of the view that the MSDS are trained, some of them are trained soldiers. If I'm incorrect, you please tell me. Now, what I do not understand is why are they not, why are they, first of all, integrated into civil society and not into reserve force? Because some of them are already trained. That is the problem I'm having at the moment. If I could be clarified on that, I'll appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Matthias?
Thank you. Firstly, let us appreciate the presentation. It was a good presentation indeed. In the follow-up to the question raised by Dr. Mulani.
If you could
speak a
little bit louder, so that he can hear.
Oh, I thought this thing, the main purpose of this thing is to make sure that he hears.
No, don't fight. Just talk.
No, I'm not undermining the Dumbaye. I'm just fighting with this machine because if it is not able to make sure that he hears me, then its purpose is not good for us. Yeah, Chairperson, I'm saying, you see, if you go through the graph, on page 17, the graph gives an impression that people who have been actively involved in the army throughout the years are only white, and hence when you go to the ranks, you find that you have got only 13 black colonels when you have 136 white colonels men. And when you, and as you go down, it gives you those big figures right throughout up until at the lower level. And that impression is an impression that says that throughout the years in South Africa, people who have been actively involved in the army are white in number, and blacks have not been serving in the army. And hence, this graph shows this indication. And this indication points out that there will be no integration at all, because you see, when you do your rankings, it's not like at an employment service where you can take an ordinary cleaner after that ordinary cleaner has proven that he or she has been studying and she has got better qualifications and she can take a better position. In the army, it doesn't work that way. Now what it says to us then is that our rankings in the army for quite a long time are going to be stagnant. There will be no visibility of integration, and that gives me a very serious concern, Chairperson. I want to have clarity on that in terms of the human resource. What is it that they are doing to close this gap? Because it's not a small gap, it's a big, big gap.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to firstly say that it is quite a comprehensive plan, HR plan and everything, and I must agree it's a good plan. But the same question, I think the general has said it, that we can have all these plans. But the question at the end of the day is, how are we going to implement it? I'm a bit worried, Chairperson, that we, because it is presented as this is a new plan. Now, what did we have up to now? Didn't we have any plans? And my question is, and I think it is slide on page 8, the implementation plan and the prioritizing of certain issues to be incorporated. Now I want to ask, how many years is it going to take to implement this plan? Because if I look at all the problems identified and it says it must be done and all that sort of thing, can we have an indication over what period will this plan be fully implemented? I know there are certain issues that is ongoing. Or give me an indication of what percentage of the plan will then be implemented. That is the first thing, Chairperson. So when it comes to the MSDS, Chairperson, I see all the figures of people joined the regulars and the reserves and everything. But I want to know, Chairperson, what are we doing to ensure that we get the best of the best of the MSDS? It has been in newspapers, Chairperson. It depends sometimes on the sexual favors you provide for your officer, whether you're going to be appointed as a regular or not, if you're in MSDS. What criteria are we following there to ensure that the joining of the regular is not dependent on your sexual favors to certain officers? It's a crucial matter. And then lastly, Chairperson, I wanted to ask a question, but I don't understand the Honorable Mazia's question, because I wanted to ask it the other way around. Because if I look at the MEM, I see of the 3,718 people that left the Defence Force, almost 2,500 were white people. Now my question is, and what worries me, Chairperson, if I look at the figures, the majority of the men are with warrant officers, one, and staff sergeants. And even if you go to the majors and the lieutenant colonels. Now, Chairperson, those are the people that actually form the core of, or what is it, the backbone, the rugraat.
Yeah.
The backbone of a defense force. It's not the generals. The middle management colonels, lieutenant colonels, the warrant officers, the staff sergeants, and I can add the corporals as well. Now, my question is, with the exit of these members, and I heard what the general said, that yes, it depends, if you've got skills and everything, that you were not allowed to exit. But can we be assured as a portfolio committee that we did not lose skills in this MEM operation? Because if I look at this, it creates the impression that we've lost quite a lot of very vital and important skills in the SANDF. Thank you, Chief.
Can I just get the correct impression about this sexual favor? Men or women?
Well, obviously, it's the majority is women.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you...
No, but
your informant is a correct informant?
Yes, my informant is correct.
Okay.
In fact, I've read it in newspapers.
You've read it in newspapers?
Yes.
So
and I have other sources that can confirm that.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm just saying that this is correct. It has always been nice to get some backing up information.
Yeah.
So that... We don't seem to see the super abuse in parliament. I don't undermine your information.
I won't make wrong statements.
I know you very much. In fact, I want to put it on record.
Yes.
So that nobody then says tomorrow, you know, I like to use the word I'm starting around. I just want to be conscious that we do have setting up information that if the committee is interested, we'll be able to set up this statement. But anybody who's approaching.
In that situation, can I say that I think it will be a good thing if this portfolio committee versus the MSDS people and ask them their problem, and then you will get the surprise.
Thank you. I'm on my best.
So welcoming the other speakers who welcome the presentation. My question is on page 4. The task of the HR unit. I'm just interested to know how big is the capacity of the unit itself, because when I look at the task, the number of tasks or functions that they are supposed to make sure that they are delivering on an efficient and sufficient manner. The second question is on page 17. I'm joining Honorable Mazia on the table. What disturbs me is that this table is from 2005. And when I look on the disparity of it, the women's side column, it's very disturbing. Since 2005 up to now, we don't see any growing of women in the defense department. And in all these tables, I don't see any reflection of the people with disability. So it means the department is not complying with the basic requirements. The last question, Peterson, out of these numbers that are abnormal, the huge numbers of white that are reflecting on this table, on the last page on 19, the department is saying one of the challenges is the recruitment of the young minority population group, which it gives me a problem, because they are already, the whites are already in numbers, but still they see the whites as a talent. What about the other groups that are not addressed in this column? Thank you so much.
So we are talking about page 13. In your question, it remains difficult to attract youth from minority population groups and university graduates. That's where you're facing your question. Okay, come. Another one. Can I give over to one of our many?
Thank you, Jeff. I want to ask three categories of questions, the one on policy, the other on expertise, and lastly, questions on reserve. Let me come to the, if you like, the highest level issue. The document says that the aim of the HR strategy is to ensure an appropriately composed HR component. Now, my understanding is we go back to Defence Force policy, the White Paper of 96 and the Defence Review of 98. The general concept was a small regular force and a large reserve force. And when we go back to the Defence Review, the force design option, if I recall correctly, that was recommended was that there would be a regular force of 36,000 individuals and a reserve force of 98,000. That is what was envisaged, and that is defence, as I understand it, our defence policy. Now, it seems that that is exactly what we don't have. We have exactly the opposite. We have a large regular force and a small reserve force. Now, my first question is, at what point was the defense policy abandoned and changed? That's the first question. And what are the overarching objectives in terms of numbers? How many regular force soldiers do we require, and how many reserve force soldiers do we require? That's the first point. The second, and that talks to page two. The second point,
Honorable, just for the sake of Honorable Stella here, your friend, can you just see the last part? What number?
I beg your pardon, sir. My understanding that the existing Defence Force policy was small regular force, large reserve force.
My understanding in terms of the recommended force design, which arose
out of the Defence Review in 1998, was that there should be roughly 36,000 regular force members and 98,000 reserve force members. So my question is, at what point was policy changed, and what are the existing targets and what are the existing numbers? I want you to properly understand that. Because it seems that in the 10 or the 14 years since that policy, we have deviated from that policy. And that has major cost implications. The second question is about expertise, and I think it builds on a question from the Honorable Krunewald. It is a concern that if you look at the statistics on page 17, what does concern me, I mean, my hypothesis would be that the MEM, to some extent, has routed the skills level in our defense force. It's of concern that the largest number of individuals that have exited are in the ranks, particularly of lieutenant, colonel, major, and captain, and then warrant officer 1, 2, and staff sergeant. Because that really is the backbone of any defense force. The last question then is in respect of reserve. If I come to a key objective of the MSDS system is, of course, to feed the reserve system. Since 2003, there were, 30,207 members entered the system, and 15,648 of those members joined the regular. That means that there are about 14,559 individuals available to the reserve. How many of those individuals would actually joined the reserve? And how many have been retained in the reserve? That's the first question. The second question concerns the number of individuals leaving the MSDS program during the 2 years. There seems to be a high attrition rate. What is that rate and why does it occur?
Thank you, sir. So I just want to echo the same sentiments that other members have said. This is really a comprehensive presentation. But it remains with questions to say, like the other people have asked, well, what was wrong with the previous system? I mean, this is just too much, but we don't know what was wrong with the previous system. And the other thing that I want to tie to the challenges, we normally talk about the challenges and not problems. And one of the challenges that we really want to understand is the difficulty in addressing the youth from the minority. What system is in place to ensure that they address it? Many as they can, whether they have something mechanism to address those people. But the other challenge the person is the accreditation of all MSDS. It is not clear what is the problem, why can't they accredit them? Because it's just a challenge accreditation. I mean, those people are not in a full-time employment. It's just a temporary job and they must go and look for a job. And it is good if they have been accredited before leaving the army. What is the issue there actually to understand it? And then on page 19, the conclusion, I just want to get the clarity here. The 50% of all exits are white male, and the other one is 63.13% of all exits are white. At what age? What is the age? Can you give us a figure of the age of those people that are exiting from the white? Thank you.
I'm coming to both of you.
No, use the mic.
Yeah, I was specifically interested to know that in the matter of sexual harassment or favor, whether do we have cases, laws against those people, whether there are any disciplinary measures that have been taken on the people who are applying that conduct. So as we know, because if people that are being harassed are just keeping it to themselves without taking it to the authorities, it will always be a dead thing.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Thank you. I also welcome this presentation. Honorable Chairperson, a big person, an healthy person, are two different elements in life. Now, here is a comprehensive program.
From the land of my team.
Comprehensive program. Now, some of honorable members have asked, at when is it going to be implemented? With me, I'm asking a question of veterans. You know, I say a fit and healthy two elements of human beings are two different things. Now, you know, veterans are the products of the defense. Being that the case, they're old. I said this several times, not today, several times. I'm dying with it. I'm dying here for several years. But consideration is very slow. Instead of prioritizing this particular group, the veterans of the old system, the veterans of our liberation movement are old. Some are dying without getting any benefit. When we walk outside, we are asked all the time, how far are you? We've been in a bush in Angola, elsewhere. Some say we've been in a camp, Valmanstown. When are we going to get our benefit? We are going, we are dying, we are sick. We have PPs, we have all this and that. It's difficult to answer, but we have to defend our government to say that we are business. We are business to rectify that. But where? Here we are sitting. When are we going to put this immediate production to assist our veterans? I recommend that it's not a question. I recommend that this particular structure should be immediately attended to assist our old people who are dying with all freedom for us who are sitting in going yet, having cold drinks and all that because of them. I'm recommending that this must be urgently attended. I repeat that it is not today. A couple of years asking about this. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, can I just? I don't know from the other members, Chairperson. I understand construction work must be done. But the truth is that you can't work in circumstances like this. I'm start getting irritated.
I think it's been going on for years now. I think this noise has been going on for years, every time you come around here. Luckily you are a whiz, you are a very senior person, so you just have to speak to the speak about this type of environment. But it has been going on for years now. Yeah. I tried, but I can't do any more.
I can do something for you if you want.
No, you use your authority. Stella, that is, come to us.
Thanks, Chair. Let me also felicitate and welcome the presentation and applaud the department for the work that they are doing. But then, as Uta Dutiara has said, we still need to do more. The little that you are doing is not good enough for our people on the ground. But now, my question, in fact, is just a point of clarity. I see only challenges as, I think it's honorable to be here as raising. On the issue of the accreditation, the challenge that we have around accreditation of the MSDS program. I believe you intend, or as I'm not sure if it has already been enrolled yet, to run a program jointly with rural development that will be run by region at the business group. I just want to understand if it is aligned to this MSDS program or it's a separate program. And then if indeed it is aligned, or as if it is, and if it is aligned, when is it going to be enrolled? If it is not, isn't it a duplication of what is there? The second question would go to the medical test of the recruit of your MSDS. Do we, as a department, undergo those tests? If yes, do we then provide medication for those that are found to be affected by whatever diseases that need urgent attention, so as to minimize the spread, as you have already heard one of my colleagues saying that there's lots of alleged sexual harassment or whatever exchange that is happening in the department. It is alleged. I might contest here that this is not the first time we're hearing about the sexual harassment, especially on MSDS programs and then the reserve, just as others were asking to compile a report. And unfortunately, it is said to be done by the seniors, which makes things difficult for those that are junior, because honestly, it is not easy to write a letter against your senior, especially if you know he or she is going to have a say on your placement in the department. Thank you, sir.
Lambo.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I also want to thank the department for this comprehensive kind of a presentation. On slide 27, the strategy on the way forward. Mine is not a long question, but I just want to know what makes the department state that the separation of the intake between the regular and the reserve forces will start taking place around January 21st. What informed the department that that time will be correct, and why is it taking too long? Thank you.
Dr. Tolo. Good morning. My apology, Comrade Jefferson. I was on other meeting. My apology. Jefferson, it's not a question. It's just follow up the point that from Tadidian, Honorable Tadidian. You know, truly speaking, Comrade Jefferson, we must look into. And, you know, in the rural area, comrades, those who fought for apartheid, are suffering, drinking alcohol, don't even have a wife, some others. If you ask him, it was not time to marry, because my time was just fine for freedom. And truly speaking, you know, I remember the old man that he had, when he was dead, because we came to the same place with him. You know, he was suffering to use a donkey to drive to, I'm telling you, because they would ban him, but he go out in his home. And he was using donkeys and so on and so on and so on. It was terrible. Now, some other people say, when we were fighting for freedom, some others were against us. Those people that were against us, now today they are nice. We are suffering. And comrade, we must, you know, I'm repeating all your chapters to say, you know better than me. Here in Western Cape, there was somebody, that man is an MK comrade. And the criminal takes man away. They were giving money to shoot some others to use him. We are talking now, he's in prison. And now we are here at the video and say, we drink tea and cold drink. That man is in prison. Because it was, those people were using him because they know he know about firearms. Now, I think the point raised from the video, we mustn't just talk and talk and talk, must talk and do something. Thank you so much. Thank you. On your slide, on page 6, these are the two last questions. Discipline and morale. Are you giving us, like when you talk about improved command line communication, are you saying that the state of things are so bad that people don't talk to each other? Is there a lack of discipline in the SNDF at this particular moment? Because you are saying that measure state of discipline and moral and informed top leadership. Are you ill-informed top leadership? Is what you are saying. Implementation of robust corrective measures. Do you want us to allow you to shoot them, or what measures are you talking about? And then implementation family dependent support program. Are you at a decent with the families of the soldiers? Give us some little bit of information. Also on your slide 14, you talk about empower military veterans through dedicated skills program. Give us more information. So that what Tatu Tiale is asking and what Mama Beth is talking about gender issues is this the state of things that we have not done, we have not been able to do so much within the SNDF. I must say, while the report and everything is good, when you get into that detail, it does create a little bit of a worry as if the SNDF has been on holiday for the past 16 years and not much has been done. Maybe you talk to this team, but it does seem to be a good plan. But what has been going on for the past other years is quite crucial for you to give us more information. I think you have done your job of letting them be quiet.
I negotiated a certain hour for you, sir, but it will start at 12:30 again.
Thank you very much. Tatu Mlange for the last time.
Chairperson, I may not have heard correctly what Honorable Kunawal was saying. But I hear people here talk.
Your cell phone pack.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
No, it's in your pocket. Nobody's yeah. Pocket. I always want to guide you. I
hear people talk of sexual harassment. But I don't think Kunawal said that. I thought he was talking of sexual favors. There's a difference between sexual harassment and sexual favor. And I shouldn't be talking that way. Instead, now, is sexual favor with, in relation to the promotion? You see? But I hear people when they talk here, they talk of sexual harassment, sexual harassment. I thought I should be cleared on that, because these are two separate things. They don't appear anywhere here on the question of sexual harassment. It's completely different from sexual behavior. What a direct opposition. Vaya danke, my name.
Yeah, no, it's my mistake, my apology. The thing is, when I wanted to do that follow-up, the chairperson kept me in abeyance for a long time, and when he called me, I forgot him exactly what was the point. So that is why I misplaced the two.
So we are talking about sexual favor,
yeah,
without blaming the chairperson.
Yeah, we are talking about sexual favor, and as we are talking about sexual favor, the point I was raising is that...
No, don't raise your point. Oh. Clarify the word. Don't hijack my platform. I'm still telling. It's sexual favor, the right to blame you. And that's where the question or the answer will be coming from. But it does say that members are speaking properly to other members. I accept there was a little bit of noise. But let's see. Mamule Brava, I'll take over to you, Bina. And then you'll decide how you share the question amongst the members.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable member. For the question on sexual favor and sexual harassment in particular, I would like the members to give the department the opportunity to go and get the facts, because we do not have the facts as it is. We do not want to sum back the information that we are going to give. We do have a division chief directorate of transformation management that specifically deals with this issue. So if the committee can bear with us, we will allow and maybe call that directorate to come and give the presentation on this matter. That will be appreciated. That's the first one. And then on...
Sorry, you accept that explanation, honorable member? Because honorable Khunaba, the man who raised the question, said he does have information, but he also, the department says they just want to check. But if you interest, it will be quite correct also. If you do have some written up things, we just submit so that you can process it and see how it meets with the information that you have from where you are seated. I also accept the fact that you said you have read quite a lot about it in the paper. Just back it up so that we can be able to see to it. So we have to go back and what do we say about it. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will provide the information to the department, Dr. Zidwana. Okay.
And through my office.
Thank you. And questions with regard to the military veterans. When General Devet started presenting, he did indicate when this strategy was best developed in 2008. We had a directorate of military veterans, a small directorate with very few capacity within the Department of Defense. That is why it was necessary to establish a dedicated Department of Military Veterans to deal with all issues of military veterans. So it will be proper that we request this committee, if it is acceptable, to invite the Director General of the Military Veterans to come and give the committee the progress report. Since this department was established, what has taken place since then on issues of military veterans.
Chairperson, I just want to say I have to leave. I was supposed to be at my next meeting already at 11. This was an important one for me. I'll look at the notes and the minutes of the other questions, but if you will excuse me. Thank you.
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 No, it's quite acceptable. And thank you all the time, Mr. Khornaba, for making time for the comments. I really appreciate it.
At least by going to another defense.
I know.
Okay.
But also, if you can just make some time, other questions, just write them down, and I'll just put them in the question. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you,
Mr.
And
okay, can I just ask the two honorable members? You know, you whisper too much, and you end up not knowing what's going on.
Really?
Yes, then you are. Now, on chapter, you will see you're whispering about where it's set. I wanted to clarify that. Now, you see.
Madam, may I ask
you to order
a bilateral issue to the meeting?
It is in the meeting. When you ask chapter, it's not bilateral. Honorable, not honorable, what happened? It's chapter also got. Did it?
I am not aware of that. Thank you. And I'm going to request General Divet to ask to respond to most of the questions. But let me first just indicate on there was a question on why are we unable to accredit our program, particularly the MSD program. If you remember last week when we presented the annual report, one of the challenges that the Secretary for Defense highlighted was accreditation of our program due to the state of our facilities. Because prior to accreditation, a team of experts has to come and inspect the facilities. So because of the state of our facilities, that's why most of our programs have failed the accreditation process. So I'm going to hand over to General Divet to answer most of the questions. Thanks. General, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Men and Members. The first question was asked, why are the MSDS we release trained soldiers into society and why not integrated into the reserves? Chairperson, if we look at the slide numbers, it is slide number 25. Slide number 25. The slide numbers on the right, left hand side on page 30. Chairperson, the challenge that page 30. There in the middle we see that 4,063 members joined the reserve. They physically joined the reserve. Out of a total of 4,744 potential. That means that 4,744 finished their 2 years training. They completed a full 2 year program. And 4,063, that means around about 700 was not interested in any further career in the reserves. So by far the majority joined the reserves. Now, Chairperson, as indicated, the policy of the department is to build the reserves. So, but when you're in the reserve system, you're not in full-time employment of the department. That means you only serve when you are called up for 30 days, 10 days, a day year, 60 days in a time of need. Therefore, while you not serve and be called up, you must have to work somewhere else. And our intent is to have employed reservists and not unemployed reservists. Because to have an employed reservist is much better. And that's where the challenge lies. So when these 4,063 left, somewhere in the slide I mentioned two slides previously, that we helped about 2,000 of them to find job opportunities. So they might work for Pick and Pay tomorrow. They are employed by Pick and Pay. But when called up for 30 days, to conduct an exercise like we have every year, once a year, to train our reserves, then we call them up. And that's the element of integrating into society, that we don't have people that sit there that's unemployed. And that's our intent. Chairperson, there was a lot of questions on slide number 33. about their representativity. Chairperson, I have another presentation here that I want to explain the relationship between slide number 33 and the slide that's on the board now, and I hope honorable members can see that. Chairperson, what we see here is the status of representativity in the department as at the 1st of October a month ago. And I'm going to use an example. There we see the rank of colonel. There are 429 black colonels, that line, up to there, in the department, which makes up 50.4%. There are colonels, 423 white colonels, that makes up a total of 49.6%. So 50% black, 49.6% white. The ideal ratio that we strive towards in our policy is to get it to 24%. So at the bottom, 76% black, which is black African talent and Indian, and 24% white. So the gap, ideal gap, to reach 24%, 76% is colonel 210. So we have in the department 423 plus 429, that means close to 900, 850 odd, if my sum is correct, colonel. Of which 49 is black. Now, how does that relate to the slide on 33? On 33, we said that 175 total exited the department since implementation in 2005, of which 154 is white. Out of the total of 855 current picture. So, Chairperson, if you look at this picture in 2005, you would have a much bigger gap. In fact, that gap was in the region of 600 in 2005 because there's other exit reasons. So this show only the exited numbers, and I only use the colonels to explain that, and we will see a similar number of warrant officers. So Chairperson, when we look at this overall picture, there we see our gap. We still have a gap on warrant officers. We still have a gap on majors, the tenant colonels, colonels, and a small gap on brigadier generalism. The other way around, we have another challenge when we look at the bottom here, in terms of lieutenant for white, and in terms of sergeants and gowns when it comes to white. And this is where our MSDS program, our challenge with the minority groups, to feed into the system. Because remember, the people from here move through the ranks. The people from here move through the ranks. And Chairperson, this macro picture show you how we plan to close those gaps, either negative or positive, depending how you see it, in terms of this. So this shows you that we don't have only 175 colonels, but there's 154 exits out of a total of 800 to close that gap and to bring that gap. I hope that will explain any questions about representativity. And we do it in a similar way when it comes to gender.
I was going to appeal to you to reproduce the slide and add it up to them.
Okay.
So that all the information that would have is that argument.
Correct.
Even in the issue of gender, if you do have an improved one, it would be nice for you to avail it, even on disability.
Yes.
So
here's the gender one, in the same fashion. In the pink column, you saw the gender per rank level. So we see how we both are captains and lieutenants, and we want to achieve 33%, and how we will then see that throughout, so I can make that available. Chairperson, next question was about the plan and how we want to implement it, in what percentage over what time. Chair, this is not so much a new strategy, it's a revised strategy. The strategy that was the success of this strategy was the HR strategy 2010. What we did, we took the good that we learned from 2010 since 2002 and up to 2009. We maintained it, we improved it, and we add new ones. And those things that we already completed, we need to get. This strategy, sir, must serve us for another decade. That's how we see it. The main implementation, the priority ones, we want to implement it over a 5-year term, chunks per year, starting with the current financial year into next year. But the main aim should be, if I must put the figure to it, is at least to put 60% of the main objectives in place over the next 5 years, MTEP plus 2 years plan. Chairperson, the question was asked, what are we doing to get the best of the best, and what criteria has been used to appoint? Chairperson, when you look at HR acquisition, you will see there's a lot of initiatives to improve the HR acquisition system. And one of the criteria is not to take on job seekers, but really to select people that want to join the military, that fit the profile of the military. There are many criteria that we apply in the process, but the challenge is to go into all areas of South Africa, into the deepest rural area. We have programs where we visit schools, where we provide exhibitions. The one is a very good example of AAD in Air Force Base Space Supply recently, where a number of youngsters came through the system. Our intention is not only to start recruiting the matriculant, but you must start catching them already here in grade 10, 11, 12, and put a tag on them and work on them to get to the military. If we look at a question that was asked earlier, how many left? I will get to that question, Chair. Our biggest effort was in the 2003 intake, where a lot of people left working the first year. And if we look how those figures improved over time, show to us that we start doing things right in terms of the recruitment. That does not mean that we're perfect. We can continuously improve to find the talent. But with the talent goes marketing, to market a duty as employer, as far as that question. The majority of whites, the members asked, warrant officers, colonels, they are the backbone. I think I explained here that it's not a matter of rejecting, it's a matter of planning exit in a controlled way as you improve representativity. And if we look at the warrant officers, it's about 2,000 warrant officers versus the number of warrant officers, 468 at exit, over a 5 year period. So it's done in a controlled way and with skills in mind. Chairperson, the question was asked, what is the capacity of the HR unit? Chairperson, if I understand this correct, this strategy will be mainly implemented by the HR division. The total contingent of the HR division is just over 1,700 members throughout the ranks. But we also have HR contingents within each service which might help implementing this strategy. What are we doing to grow the women and disability? The chairperson, as far as women is concerned, you saw the gender picture, I showed that, I will add that into the slide. We are very proud, chairperson, to say that the numbers that we took in the MSDS system, the women, over the last three intakes, that means that was the January 2008 intake, 9 and 10, were over 30%. Of them were women. In terms of disability, chairperson, you won't see many numbers in terms of disability in terms of the men. Because when a member becomes disabled and exits the party, they normally exit through what we call medically unfit, because there's other benefits attached to give the member the best benefit. So that's a totally different exit reason, but we have the figure of the number of disabled people in the department. In the military, we don't recruit people in terms of disabled because the member must be medically fit. But when a member becomes disabled through the execution of his or her duty, we retain those members and utilize them.
Can I just indicate to you, we would have to run a little bit faster. We still have got another presentation. We are not going to allow any member to interact or come in now because we do need that present question that you are here and you can't perform it.
I will speed up, chairperson. The question was asked about the policy, small and sufficiently large reserves. Yes, Stephen, that's still the objective. We downsized the regular force from 101,000 in 1998 to the current 76,000. The defense review talked about 70,000. But there is a review underway currently for 2030 that talks about increasing the regulars, but also build the reserves to figure in the region of just over 50,000. So I think the word sufficiently large and small regular, we need to clarify that in perception as we go into the revised policy of the future. I think I asked the question on expertise, colonels that exit, the backbone in terms of representativity, reserve, the aim to feed the reserves, the actual numbers that join the reserves. Here we see the current reserve strength chairperson is just over 25,000. The regulars, as I indicated, 76,000. The number that's leaving there during that 2-year period, I don't have that figures with me, Chair, but I can provide it to Mr. Mania, but it's a small number. It's a number less than
the committee.
Or to the committee.
Yeah.
Less than 200 chairpersons during that 2-year period. What was wrong with the old system? A chance of accreditation, Dr. Ledwabo already addressed that. The problem to track white, we saw this on the slide, Chair. We need to put in more effort at certain schools, and that process is underway. The accreditation Dr. Edwardo talked about, sexual harassment she talked about, but I think she also addressed
sexual favor.
Sexual favors, yes, sir. Healthy human beings, the veterans that our honorable member from the Pope talked about, I totally agree with him in terms of the challenges and the veterans. And then there was a point of clarity. The program with rural development. Chairperson, as far as my knowledge is going, Dr. Edwardo can maybe fill in here, this is the Envisage National Youth Service, which is a total different program and not related to the MSDS currently. As time unfolds and we see more about the pilot group of the National Youth Service, there might be an interlink in future, but at this stage, that is not the plan. Members, are they tested? When they come in, yes, they are tested for medical reasons. And we provide support in terms of medication, but I think the Surgeon General should speak more on this matter. Slide 27 on the way forward, what is the intent with to separate? I wanted to get to slide 27 right there. Yes, Chair, the intent with the separation, as I already explained, a member, where they separate, or the separate intake, and why does it take only to 2012? Chairperson, we want to split it into intakes. But the intake, normally the big intake of the Defence Force is in January of each year. The intake that arrives in 2 months' time from now is already recruited. It's far advanced, that process. It started in January already. Therefore, it's not possible to split and go into a total new approach for the January 11th intake. Next year, after that intake report, we already start the recruitment process for January 12th, and therefore it's important to do it a year in advance, and we can't piggyback now and change the program midstream. That's why it's 12. Chairperson, then your question on page 6, the command line communication discipline, corrective measures, programs that we need to put in place. Chairperson, that does not mean there are not good command line communication, but there are room for improvement through our bulletin, through the latest technology. One of the methods we will hear now when we talk about grievances, how information technology must support this process. In terms of morale, there are some morale surveys being done on a continuous basis to improve those. So there are programs underway, but there are room for improvement in terms of those programs. Veterans and sexual harassment was the last, or favors, was the last question that I got down. Chairperson, I hope I covered most of the questions.
Thank you, General. On the policy, I just want to add that the defense white paper, as well as the defense review, are still the policies that guide the department. For the department to reach the target first in those two policies, we are utilizing the different exit mechanisms that General Zivet talked about. That's Chairperson. The next presentation is done by Mr. Zwane, the Director of Labor and Service Relations. He will take you through the new grievance procedure. And he will explain to you, because in front of your presentation, you see a wedding saying Paragana. So he will explain to you what that Paragana means for the Department of Defense. And his second presentation will be on the progress report on all the grievances that we received from this committee, and he will give a status of how far we are with the investigation of those grievances. Mr. Zani, you have started with the explanation of what Paragraph 9 is, including the logo that is there. Thanks.
Thank you, Professor, and honorable members. In terms of explaining the Parahana, contract, this was a trending word that we used to market the new prison procedure within the department. This logo, in terms of this logo, we have the employees, the employer, and all part of the department working together. We are saying from now onwards, we have to work together to ensure that the employees and members' issues are attended to, and as we attend to them, we attend to those issues in terms of the applicable policies. Okay, this is the presentation on the new grievance procedure, and as has been indicated, the aim is to present this new grievance procedure to members of the Parliamentary Committee on Defense of the Ministry of Veterans. In terms of the scope, I'll be going into introduction. I'll give details of the new grievance procedure. I'll explain the new grievance process. I'll explain the steps to be followed to lodge a grievance. I'll deal with the issue of non-compliance with the new regulations. I'll give an overview of the training that is given on the grievance procedure and also on the IT system, and then I'll conclude. In the past, as part of the introduction, we've had a grievance policy, that's separated between members and employees. When I deal with members, I'm talking to military members, and employees would be civilian employees of the department that are covered by the public service. Now, we had two different processes that dealt with the manner in which these two groups had to lodge their grievances. Members were covered by an instruction that was issued by the chief of the NDF in 1995, and the people who had to deal with their grievances from members had to attempt to resolve and finalize the grievances within a period of 40 days. Then we had the rules and regulations that are issued by the Public Service Commission and the Department of Public Service and Administration, and those rules govern civilian members of the different departments. In terms of members' issues, the instruction provided for resolution of grievances within a period of 40 days. And for civilian component of the defense force, those people, the civilian members, their matters had to be finalized within a period of 30 days. However, we had a challenge in terms of this policy because compliance with the policy was non-existent. Now, as we identified problems in terms of dealing with these members' issues, we looked at extending the period from the 40 and 30 to a period of 90 days. Now, you'll see that as we go into the other slides, the applicable time frame now is 90 days to resolve a member or an employee's grievance. Now, we worked on trying to move away from the new system, the old system that was not working for the department and for us, because that created a number of problems in the sense that people got frustrated as their matters dragged on and dragged on, and they were not resolved. They would approach a number of different institutions to try and get some recourse. They would come to Parliament, they would write to the Public Service Commission, they would write to the Human Rights Commission, and at the end would spend more time on trying to focus on those matters that had been referred to the different institutions, because and people gave the impression that if you refer your matter to some other external institution, then you would ensure that your matter is prioritized. And that went against those that are going through the channel of command. So then we have worked and developed the new grievance procedure, which was approved by the minister on 8 July 2010. And these regulations were promulgated on 30 June 2010 in the Government Gazette, and they are effective from the 1st of July 2010. The features of the new grievance procedure is that we've developed an IC system that supports this grievance procedure. It's very simple and easy to use. The accountability of role players is visible. If I may just expand on this point, in terms of the last, the previous system, a member would lodge a grievance at OC level, and the OC would decide not to do anything about the grievance. Then no one would be able to get the OC to account for that grievance because it's not visible anywhere. And second, the fourth point is that it's driven by the aggrieved, meaning that if the member is not happy with the decision that is given, he may take or she may take the grievance to the next level, which I'm going to explain later in the process. The SECDEF and the Chief of SMDF have visibility on the grievances that are lodged at all levels through this IT system that has been developed. So the SECDEF can just go into the system and say, okay, let me have a look at all the grievances that are within, you know, the system, and that is possible in terms of the new system, and that is things that was not possible in terms of the previous system. Continuing on the features of the new grievance procedure, we have developed two structures to support the system. At the service and divisional level, we have grievance committees, which are already up and running at all services and divisions. In the past, we had the Air Force, the Navy, and SEMS. They have their own structures which function along the lines of grievance committees. But he did not have any force of any law, because they were just established by the different services to expedite the processes. But now, in terms of the regulations, the chiefs of services and divisions have the responsibility to ensure that they have grievance committees within their own environment. We also have a grievance board that's operating at corporate level. It means matters that are not resolved at grievance committee stage taking up at the next level, which is the corporate level grievance board. And the grievance board represents the SECDEF chief and the Minister of Defense. In terms of the process is broken into 1, 2, 3 phases. The first phase is at the 7-4, which is at the unit level. This is where the grievance gets lodged with the OC or director, manager, or supervisor of that unit. He has a responsibility to try and finalize the grievance within a period of 30 days. If he makes a decision or she makes a decision and the aggrieved is not happy with the decision, the aggrieved himself or herself may take the grievance to the next stage. As you can see from the slide, the next stage is divided into two parts: the formation and service division level. The chief of the service division has that responsibility. If he feels this environment is too big, like the army, he may break it down into, you know, formation stage. In that event, the formation stage has 15 days to attempt to resolve the matter, and the service chief will also have a period of 15 days. In all, that phase meets up 30 days to 15-15. And at this stage, at this phase, the service chief has a responsibility to put up a grievance committee, which will assist him with the resolution of grievances at this level. Then the last stage is the stage of the grievance board, level 1 and level 0. This is where we're representing, the grievance board is being represented by the SECDEF chief. The SECDEF and chief and minister are being represented by the grievance board to give the final decision on, you know, the grievance. At this level again, it's the grievance, the aggrieved person who may refer the grievance to the grievance board if he or she is not happy with the decision of the grievance committee. And the board also has 30 days within which to attempt to finalize or resolve the grievance. Okay, steps to be taken in lodging a grievance. The grievance must be lodged within a period of 90 days from when the act of commission took place. Now, for definition for the grievance, we have a copy of the regulation that we have distributed, and the grievance, the meaning of the grievance is explained that it will refer to an act of omission on the part of whoever is in charge of that unit, and which gives rise to dissatisfaction on the part of the member or the employee. So the grievance must be lodged in writing. It must be lodged by the aggrieved in person. There's a threat that unit level will assist the aggrieved in catering the grievance on the IT system. We have a situation where the hard copies of documents that are completed, the student form is also completed on the IT system.
Sorry, Master Brian. That detail is the picture that we have here in black and white.
Yes. That's the detail we have.
Yes, I thought all the OCC have supplied quite a lot of documents. I don't want you to go through in detail there. Unless there's something substantial that is different from what is written here.
Okay.
But it has been a sense of what the process is to be followed. Okay. So don't go into this in that type of detail.
The MA just mentioned that when a grievance is lodged, the duty of the OC is just to investigate and come back with the decision. Then it will go through the different stages, grievance committee and grievance form. May I just attend to the issue of non-compliance, because we've had this problem in the past, that there's an instruction by the chief of the MNDF, but people just decide not to follow it, and the regulations of the Public Service Commission. We say in terms of these new grievance regulations, in terms of Section 104, Subsection 17 of the Defence Act, any person who undermines or stifles or seeks to undermine or stifle any procedure for redress of grievances is guilty of an offence and liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years. There's another section, Subsection 15, which deals with a member of the department who, in a willful and negligent manner,
conducts in the face to comply with the regulations that are made under the
what happened to your mic?
Okay. That was Section 104, which deals with willful or negligent non-compliance with the regulations. So these are the exceptions that are available for use against people who fail to comply. We also saying disciplinary steps are going to be taken against people who willfully or negligently defy the regulations. We have a grievance secretariat to the board, and we've given a number, the fax number, for people who feel that the non-compliance with the regulation is taking place, and also with the instruction that was issued by the chief and for defense on these grievance regulations as to how they're going to be implemented. We are saying that non-compliance should be reported at this number for the grievance board to ensure that action is taken against the perpetrators. What's also good about these regulations is that the Regulation 8 provides that an aggrieved may not be victimized or prejudiced directly or indirectly as a result of having lost the grievance. Okay, on the communication side, on our website, the DOD policy website, these grievance regulations are available for all members to see. There's also an interim implementation instruction on this regulation that was issued jointly by the chief, the secretary, on 8 June 2010, and it's also available on our HR website. We've also gone on a campaign which we had called the Tswarakganang campaign, and printed posters, distributed them at different units. We've sent out information bulletins on these new grievance regulations. we've had articles in the SA Soldier and Reserve Force to reach as many people as possible so that they are aware of this new system. We've also conducted regional briefings over the period from 7 July to 31st August, where we made sure that the representatives from the top level to the bottom of services and divisions are informed of this new grievance procedure. We've also trained, you know, people on the IT system, and those people had to go back to their services and divisions and then make sure that everyone who had to deal with you know, the lodging and capturing of prisoners is trained on this IT system, as well as the people like the OCs who have to make sure that they respond on the system. They also have training so that they can respond properly in terms of this translation. We have an information desk that we have established with effect from the 1st of July to take all calls that are related to this new grievance procedure and whatever problems that people are encountering in trying to implement this new grievance procedure. That would be the end of the presentation of the new grievance regulations and procedures.
Of course, that's blinded. Thank you for the presentation. I thought you were still going to also present some of the answers before people. I hope that you have already started to do.
Or may I go through the update on the submissions that
you have? Yeah, we have done a very quick job. Just show us the update on some of the things that are. You still have time on your side.
Unless unfair suspension, one.
request by the Khoisan military veterans to be integrated into the South African National Defense Force. One, harassment. One, request for medical records. Two, recalculation of, I think, voluntary severance package. 10, reinvestment of legal costs. One, discrimination. One, payment of allowances. Two, unfair treatment of special on special pension. One, payment of medical accounts. One, war veterans pension. Three, recalculation of pension benefits. One, case of assault. One, claim for UIF unemployment insurance fund. One, non-approval to attend the course. One, there's another document that details. No, it's the grievances that we say we finalize. On the other 35 that we got from the Honorable Mr. Mania, we also have a document that we've introduced, which gives summaries of the different grievances. Now we've also categorized them per service. The Army has 32, Navy 2, SAM 3, Air Force 1, Reserve Force 1. Other services, other divisions, and those that we could not pin down to the Army because of the information that was not sufficient, it's about 14. Then those that related to the Department of Military Veterans were 3. That would be the end of the presentation, sir.
That should be really appreciated, the effort of the people related to everything that. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Duane, and thank you to the department. Can I allow questions, member? It all depends on you now. We are on quarter past five.
Thank you, Chairperson. I won't be very long. We'll do one or two questions. Very simple ones, and short. First one is with regards to the appointment of the board. Who appoints the grievance board? And secondly, do you have intention barracks? And if so, who are the people you send to these barracks? When they have done what or not they have done what?
Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to begin by complimenting Dr. Letwaba and her team on two things. First, implementing a new grievance system, and then producing evidence today that the grievances which have been submitted to the department are now lodged and are being, if you like, worked on. There are really two questions. The first is, we will, over time, be receiving more complaints and grievances from members of the Defence Force and from members of the public. Through you, Chair, what now is the correct procedure to deal with those complaints from a member of this committee's perspective? How will it be introduced into the department? Will it be by individual member or through you as committee chair? That's the first question. The second question is, I would suggest, and I don't know if Dr. Letwaba has any thoughts on this, that both the committee and each individual member receive a regular report back, perhaps every 3 months, on the status of the grievance, whether they resolved, unresolved, and what action is being taken in respect of each grievance. Chair, the last point I want to make, in the presentation, it's correctly stated that on the 26th of August I introduced 35 grievances. Now, those grievances were actually not introduced for the first time, they were reintroduced. That raises the question about how we got into the situation in the first place. And frankly, I don't think it's very useful to pursue that here. But it really does raise the question why it's taken more than a year for us to get from where we were to where we are now. I mean, perhaps somebody could explain it to me outside this session. I don't think it's worthwhile to see it here. But it really does raise a very serious question about what was going on inside the Ministry of Defense.
We are also conscious that the minister is dealing with a legacy of problems there. And it seems to see from my own experience in the defense committee, this is being the first time where you have had something more concrete to say how to deal with grievances inside the department itself. If there's no more questions, I think I'll come to that. I'm just saying that this is correct what you have done now. And maybe you see also like what you are saying, David, is that whatever grievance that has been shared by you or by any other member, it has to be shared amongst committee members. But also individual. They go to you, they go to me, they go to that one, and all we seem to think that these are new grievances. And finally, they are dealing with the same individual. But because he's not satisfied, he walks around, and wherever he hears there's a committee, and then he goes and talks to that individual. So it's important whatever response we have must be shared amongst ourselves so that we don't end up doing the same work on the same individual and getting the same response. And we come here and we fight about the type of individual that has raised their complaints. But I must say that the department, by introducing this particular development, it is one that we all have to congratulate in our different strengths. Can I give you to answer those few questions, sir? We are still excited about you.
Thank you. The first question was about...
Just be patient. There's a head here. There's a line of command.
Before Mr. Vani can answer the question, I just want to indicate that we did appreciate receiving the grievances that we received from the portfolio committee plus those we received from Honorable Mr. Menia. And I'm really begging that in future, any grievances that are received by this committee, they should follow the correct channel, be given to the chairperson so that the chairperson communicated those grievances through the ministry, then they will come to the department, and then we will resolve those grievances accordingly. Yes. And then there is a question that was asked by Mr. Mlangeni about whether we have detention barracks and who is sent to those detention barracks. I don't think the team that is here has the competency to respond to that question. But however, we will go back and we will try and send an answer back to respond to Honorable Mr. Mlangeni's question. With regard to the appointment of the board, both the Secretary for Defense and the Chief FANDF, because the Secretary for Defense is responsible for the employees, and the Chief of SANDF is responsible for members of the SANDF. The members that are appointed, we also have other bodies outside, such as the Public Service Commission, as well as the Public Service and Administration. Those two departments also have a say to check whether the people that are appointed to that board are the people who have the competency and the commitment, and they are the people who have thorough knowledge and understanding of the grievance procedure as it stands. Because in this procedure that we have in place, we have infused the civilian grievance procedure as well as the military procedure to make sure that it is efficient, it is effective. So the people who are responsible, who will be members of the board, the Secretary for Defense and the Chief SANDF will appoint them, but with the concurrence of the Public Service Commission, as well as the DTSA. Thank you very much.
So, when the new legislation kicks in, the commission, so it will be other changes.
There will still be other changes because currently, as you know, when the minister came in, there were so many challenges that she has faced. So we are doing this bit by bit to make sure that we have a perfect system that we are putting in place to ensure that the challenges that are facing our members, our employees, are being addressed effectively. Even the people that we will appoint to make sure these issues are dealt effectively and efficiently with people with those competencies to deal with this matter. Thanks, Dr. Okay.
Thank
you. Thank you. I may have missed this in the presentation, but I wonder if Dr. Letwaba could clarify. I mean, the situation that she would have found herself in was that grievances would not only have been clogged up in the Defence Force, but would also have been clogged up in other institutions like the Public Protector, the Human Rights Commission. Have those grievances now been pulled into the Defence Force, or are they still separate? How have you dealt with those rather difficult cases?
Thank you, Chairperson. Many of the grievances that were clogged all over, we have tried to pull them back into the department. Like we received grievances from the Public Protector, we received grievances from the Presidency, also grievances that we received from here. So we have established contact. We are working closer with the Presidency and we are working closely with the Public Protector. Any grievance that they receive, we sit down and we analyze the grievance, and then we take it from the in the department to investigate. Thank you,
sir. Is there anything, Mr. Zwane, or are you happy?
I have to stick to the of command.
But definitely says, honorable members, that we have come to a conclusion of the day. And thank you to both officials and everybody that has come here today to come and see that. You can see the work in progress, and we really appreciate it. As members, you must go through this so that when you meet and come across people, you know how to respond to these different conferences and who to talk to so that you don't end up with confusion in our eyes. Coming to the issue of lunch, Mr. Mazia, Honorable Mazia, you have been invited by the speaker today. In the old assembly, there is a function taking place there. And I hope that all members have been invited, where they are giving over the results of the election. Yeah, and some wrong. So we couldn't get now into that particular environment of getting our lunch to be made. So that's why there is no lunch at this particular moment. But I have told my secretary long ago to take the resources of the committee and prepare lunch for you. So it's not that I'm not giving you lunch.
Yeah. No, I'm raising it because even yesterday we were not taken care of and we did have a committee.
No, we didn't have a committee.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh,
yeah, don't confuse these things. Don't come and release information here of all your meeting with you. Thank you, every member. And then. See you. No. Clarifying you, Satim Lange. Satim Lange. Parliament, right? Parliament processes and plenary ends on the
18th.
No, Satim Lange. And then committees are allowed to meet up until the 26th. We will just accept if there is any other urgent thing that has to be addressed before that. But if there's nothing, we'll always keep to the 18th and see to it that we end up on the 18th. But as you can see, the program situated, we are only going up until the 17th. Then our last committee meeting will be on the 17th for this particular term, unless there's any other thing that arises. then we will call back. But at no stage, we will go up until the 25th.
How?
This one there, no. We are giving them holiday now. So the Abbasis and St. David as Christian made up, now they are looking like happy people now. We will go ahead with our work, and she will go ahead with their work. And No, Chief, you can go there, they will give you the direction. Thank you, Honorable Member. If you have received the invitation, there is all invitation, huh? Okay.
Thank you.
Come again, Chief.